Hello, fellow Kentuckians and other friends, and welcome to a new edition of My Old Kentucky Podcast. My name is Robert Connie, and joining me, as always, is Jasmine Smith. Jasmine, how are you today?
I'm doing well, Robert. How are you?
I'm doing pretty well. It's been quite the week, at least in terms of drama in Frankfurt. Not so much going on policy-wise, but we're going to be talking about both of those things this week. We're going to give a little bit of an update as to the bills that are going through the legislative session, and an update as to some of the things that we think might get passed quickly. And then Jasmine will be telling us all about the drama that's been taking place up there in Frankfurt. And then we have another little segment about Democratic retirements, which seem to be increasing on the rise this year. So, without any further ado, let's get started. Okay, Jasmine, the session is now in its second week. I think officially they have completed 7 legislative days as of today, which is January the 10th. Not much has happened. That's just the long and the short of it. So we had Senator Morgan McGarvey on the show a little while ago. He is my state senator, and he sends out this like constituent email. Do you get one of those from your state rep or state senator?
No, I need to.
Yeah, I don't know if you have to sign up. I don't know how I ended up with him.
I probably
honestly
have to get on some list.
Yeah, well, I somehow found myself, you know, he might have just like added me. I don't know. Who knows? Who knows what happened? Anyways, I get his constituent email, and in his email, he called it a do-nothing week, which I think that that's pretty fair. There have been, as of now, I believe 346 different bills that have been filed by legislators, with the busiest committees being state government and the judiciary committees in the House, appropriations, revenue, and state and local government committees in the Senate. Some people have been filing more bills than others. So John Sims, who's from Flemingsburg, David Givens, and Danny Carroll are among the most prolific filers of bills. Each of those guys have filed more than 20 bills, which means that they're just on the sponsor list. We have several more that have more than 10, but those are the most prolific guys when it comes to actually filing legislation this year. We talked about the process, and we went through this last year where we had like 5 bills pass in a very short period of time in the first week of the session, and we do not have that this week. We do not have the same sort of rush to get everything done that we had in the year prior. So what we do have is 2 House bills and 4 Senate bills, and this is as of yesterday, so this is as of January the 9th, that seem to be ready to be put on the floors of the bodies. So Jasmine, the first one I want to highlight is House Bill 23, which is the exact same as Senate Bill 4. This would make the state government election that is scheduled for 2023 move to 2024 to make it align with the presidential election. So whoever wins the election in 2019 would then serve a 5-year term, and then they would then be elected or reelected on 2024, which would mean that we would then be on the cadence of having our governor and our executive branch officers elected every 4 years, the same year as a presidential election. This bill is sponsored by Kenny Imes. That's a pretty...
So I guess we've always been a year off from the presidential election.
Yeah, we will elect in 2019, which is the year before the next presidential election. Yeah, and there aren't that many states left that do that. I think Kentucky, Louisiana, New Jersey, and Virginia are actually the only ones left that do that at all. So that's a bill. I mean, that would mean that we would be with the vast majority of the other states that have a election only on the years of presidential elections. Okay, so that's one bill that we definitely have our eye on. The next one is House Bill 10. House Bill 10 would allow the General Assembly to review executive branch administrative regulations between sessions of the General Assembly and overturn them if necessary. That was submitted by Kenny Imes of Murray and a couple of co-sponsors. House Bill 10 basically is a constitutional amendment, so there isn't a lot of detail involved. But what would happen is essentially there would be a process by which if the administrative did an action, introduced a regulation or something while the General Assembly was not in session, there would be some sort of mechanism or process by which the General Assembly would be able to then review it and overturn it if they saw fit. So like kind of a like checks and balances type situation. Because, you know, the executive branch is full-time, they're always working, they're always issuing regulations, and the legislature is part-time, they're only usually in session during the first part of the year. There's a lot of stuff that happens that is in effect for almost a full year before it can be, you know, reviewed or overturned by the legislature. There would be a lot of details that would need to be worked out in this, but this is just a constitutional amendment that gives the legislature the ability to do that. So both HB 10 and House Bill 23/SB4, they would be constitutional amendments. And so, Jasmine, what this means is essentially that not only do they have to pass the legislature, they have to then be approved by voters. So we
right,
would then
so there would be a little something on your ballot on election day about whether you vote yes or no.
Yeah, and Kentuckians are allowed to vote on at least two, or on at most two constitutional amendments every session. I believe the last time we did that was 2004, when we had the constitutional amendment that banned gay marriage in our constitution. So that's still on the books in Kentucky. Obviously, you know, it's not allowed because of the United States Supreme Court, but
I voted on some, like, fish and wildlife.
Was it a constitutional amendment?
Amendment.
Really?
1 year.
Oh, maybe I'm missing one. That was at least the last really big one. I would
right.
think that moving the presidential election, that would be a pretty big one. The other one, that House Bill 10 about the you know, legislative review, that would be a big deal. I don't know if it would garner the same kind of campaign that we saw in 2004. So, I mean, that would also mean that something like the restoration of voting rights for former felons, which has been something that has been on the to-do list for Democrats and liberals in the state for a long time, which would be a constitutional amendment, that would be crowded out if these two made the list. But I don't see that passing legislature this year anyway, so that's where that is. Okay, another bill I want to highlight, Jasmine, is Senate Bill 3, also known as Marcy's Law. It's termed the Crime Victims Bill of Rights. It's a bill that's been passed in several other states and started in California in 2008. There's a lot of details about this one.
I have a lot of feelings on it.
Yeah,
as well.
It's a very interesting thing. And this one actually did go to the Senate floor today, and I think was the first bill that was actually passed out of a House, and it passed with only one no vote, three non-votes, but only one no vote, and that was John Schnickel from Northern Kentucky. I think just because Whitney Westerfield was the sponsor, and they are frenemies. But yeah, they're ACLU and I think the Partnership for Domestic Violence, I think is the organization, both testified against it in committee. So it was a little interesting. It's a little bit more contentious than I would have thought. I don't really know much about it.
I thought that this one was also going to be a constitutional amendment as well.
It might be. I haven't read it that closely. We'll have to clarify that.
Okay.
Okay.
But yes, I do have a lot to say about Marcy's Law, so maybe that
we'll let you talk about it next week.
Show.
Yeah. All right. Sounds good. Okay. Senate Bill 7 would create the Kentucky Rare Disease Advisory Council. That's a group that would be appointed by the governor to make recommendations about what else but rare diseases. That was Julie Rock Adams. She sponsored that one. And Senate Bill 70 would appropriate $8 million for the University of Louisville to have a television broadcast and production studio. That was sponsored by Chris McDaniels in Louisville. That's, you know, he's done a lot of U of L stuff in the past couple of years. So those were just some big bills to highlight over the past couple of days. The pace, you know, is rather slow. It's much slower than it was last year. And I think that has a lot to do with some of the drama that you're going to be talking to us about. So, you know, the other thing that's a little surprising is there hasn't been any bills filed to address the pension or the budget. So the governor, you know, obviously he doesn't submit his budget recommendations until the 10th legislative day, but we have no idea anything about the pension, which could have been done on day one. And, you know, obviously could have been addressed in a special session that never happened. The Democrats did file a revenue bill, which is something that a lot of people have pointed to as a potential solution and something that the state really needs. And we talked a little bit about that bill with Sherilyn Stevenson last week. I don't expect that bill to go anywhere, but the Democrats are certainly doing their priorities, filing things and getting things up and running in a way that, you know, probably won't have much to do with what actually gets passed there at the end. So that's what happened last week. Jasmine, can you tell us that was not as exciting a segment because there wasn't much going on because of all the stuff that you have to tell us about regarding Jeff Hoover.
Okay, so I titled this the Jeff Hoover segment because I feel like this is now just a weekly segment that we do.
Probably needs to be that way, yeah.
Yeah, so, all right, when we were here last week on my Old Kentucky podcast, Jeff Hoover was still the Speaker of the House, and he announced that he was not going to be resigning as Speaker, but he merely transferred his authority to David Osborne while the ethics investigation was pending.
It wasn't really clear which ethics investigation he was talking about because there were multiple, and we're going to get into that, right?
Right, there was a rule passed at the very beginning of the session about a committee to investigate. Mm-hmm. But then there's also the legislative ethics committee. So mm-hmm. maybe two investigations happening, but We'll get into that in a minute. Last Wednesday, which was the day we recorded, but this didn't make it on the podcast, I don't think, 8 Republican House members sought to expel Jeff Hoover from office. They argue that he sexually harassed the staff member, paid money, and misused his state resources in an effort to cover it up. And then he created a hostile work environment in the House Majority Leadership Office.
Right.
So Robert Benvenuti, who we talked quite a bit about last week, because we talked to a candidate who will be running against him, potentially if she wins the primary.
Right.
And Stan Lee from Lexington were two of the members. Russell Weber from Shepherdsville, Phil Moffitt from Louisville, Joe Fisher of Fort Thomas, Tim Moore of E-Town, Kim King of Harrodsburg, and Adia Wuchner from Burlington are the 8 members who are filing this petition to expel. So the new rules say that a complaint must be filed by at least 2 members. The complaint can then go to a bipartisan committee that has the authority to vote to expel. So this happened last Wednesday. Then on Friday, the Republican Party of Kentucky called a special executive committee meeting to discuss the Jeff Hoover hoopla. That's not the word they use. That's just the word I use.
The Hoover hoopla.
So they set this meeting for January 13th, which it's not January 13th yet. And more has happened since then. So they never actually had this meeting, I don't suppose. So then we fast forward to Monday. Jeff Hoover officially resigns as speaker in a very impassioned speech.
Man, oh man, was it impassioned. That is true.
He talked about how this all has affected him. He said that he would go home and he would lie in a fetal position and cry, that he lost 33 pounds in 4 weeks. Then he accused Governor Bevin of lying by saying that him and the staff member were sexually involved. And he said that these were lies from the deepest pits of hell.
Jeez.
Right. So impassioned, right?
Right.
He vowed to expose the people who have been conspiring against him and mentioned a man from Jefferson. I'm guessing he was talking about Phil Moffitt.
Right.
In that part.
Yeah, you just mentioned that Phil Moffitt was one of the 8 people who filed
right.
for
and, your movie. And not during the speech, but in the past week, Jeff Hoover gave comments to the Associated Press and said that Phil Moffitt had been after the speaker seat since he got to the House. Mm-hmm. So there's definitely a vendetta there. He said he would not be resigning from his position as state representative, and he said that he would file a pension reform bill Tuesday to demonstrate that he is not a distraction.
One other thing he did say in that speech, too, was he mentioned about how much had been orchestrated by that guy that was the House clerk, who I was kind of thinking might have been like a Hoover loyalist that was being punished by the other Republicans, and that's kind of what I said last week. But it turns out that this guy was behind the Hoover firing all along, according to him. So,
right.
You know, and it was really weird. There's a lot of weird stuff going in there. So, I mean, we watched the speech on KET and, you know, the cameras there on Jeff Hoover, but he's sitting there looking at people and he's like mentioning people. He's like,
right.
And I can see this staff member now smirking at me in the gallery. And I was like, oh,
it was very, I mean, he was resigning, but it was very accusatory and he didn't really accept a lot of responsibility.
Joe Girth actually wrote a column in the Courier Journal that said, you know, Jeff Hoover, you're not the victim here, which I think is something that he might be missing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. And so this happened on Monday, but it's not over yet. On Tuesday, he asked the House to approve a new rule that would be if lawmakers ask for another lawmaker to be expelled and they are unsuccessful, they then must pay all costs incurred by the member accused of the misconduct. Right. So this sounds like a rule that could benefit him.
Yeah.
Potentially.
Right. Right.
So the current speaker, I guess he's the speaker now.
No, he's still the acting
he's
speaker.
Still,
Okay. There, we have no speaker. We have no speaker at all.
So acting speaker David Osborne was going to allow a vote on this. Representative Stan Lee asked to table it. And
Stan Lee being one of the other people
who filed the petition to expel. So the motion to table gets defeated.
Right. Which would have meant they would have had to vote on it like right then.
Yes. Yeah. And so they take a little break to allow the legislators to read the rule. And then Osborne gets up and says, well, the amendment's out of order because it was drafted it was attached to the wrong version of the House rules, so we can't vote on it.
Yeah.
So they don't.
That seems to me a little bit like a power move, which is not something that Jeff Hoover's unfamiliar with since he was the House Speaker.
Correct.
Last year, you know, so it's a little like the shoes on the other foot. So, yeah, I don't know. I don't know how they ruled on this or why they ruled on it that way, but yeah, it's very surprising.
Right. So this rule was not voted on yesterday. And he has also said that he intends to run for re-election. So that's a bit of news.
Unsurprising.
As well. He is not going quietly into the night.
Right. No, not at all. Not at all. Yeah.
Then today, like an hour ago, David Osborne talking about Rule 23A that allowed
those eight people,
right, allowed them to file the complaint, said that after leadership handed over investigation of Hoover to the Legislative Ethics Commission, a resolution was filed to expel him and no one knew how to handle it. So he reached out to constitutional lawyers about it. And he thought that the best way to move forward would be to repeal the rule. So then the House voted unanimously to eliminate the House committee investigating him.
Yeah, so this is kind of nuts, right? So we talked last week about the House rules vote and how the Democrats were like, hey, we should have a chance to read these rules before we vote on them. Hey, let's make sure that we get a chance to see what's up here. We don't want to vote on things before we know what's in them. And the Republicans just plowed ahead because they...
Nah.
And they have 60 votes,
right.
so they can. They did. And then all of a sudden now they're like, oh, wait. And we have David Osborne here talking about, like, reaching out to constitutional lawyers, like, after the fact. Like, come on, man. Like, do some work ahead of time. I mean, you know, like,
right,
you knew that this was going to get crazy. So I don't know why you wouldn't have all your ducks in a row. And if you didn't have all your ducks in a row, I don't know why you wouldn't, like, open up the rules or at least delay until you could get them in a row before just plowing forward. Because it seems like that they've created a huge mess here.
Right. And so it sounds really crazy to say that they've just eliminated this committee that they created, but it's not totally going away because they're basically just deferring to the Legislative Ethics Commission investigation.
Right. And I mean, that also, you're absolutely right. And Kelly Flood was on the floor of the House, and I think it was a couple days ago when they were talking about setting up this committee in the first place. Or it might have been when they were talking about this Rule 23A yesterday. And she was like, you know, we have a process in place. I don't know why we need another process. And it turns out that she's totally right. Why would the House Republicans created a redundant process and then decided the redundant process was stupid and then decided to do away with it? In the meanwhile, we've got, you know, eight bills, two of which are like constitutional amendments, but others are, you know, stuff that has been intended to pass for a couple years, and the House just really hasn't done any business when we have major issues facing us.
Right. Basically, the General Assembly has been dealing with Jeff Hoover shenanigans,
and
it's just been a distraction.
It's funny you use that word, right? Because he said that. He's like, I don't want to be seen as a distraction, and he even said like he was going to file his pension.
Right,
bill.
And I don't think that happened.
He has not filed it
yet. It was supposed
it
to happen Tuesday, and I don't believe it did.
One of my favorite things about this speech also is he referred to Lexington Herald leader writer Daniel DeRocher, I actually don't know how to say it. He referred to him as Danny Boy, and Mr. DeRocher then asked Jeff Hoover if he'd filed the pension bill yesterday, and Jeff Hoover said, Danny Boy, don't even ask. So, I don't know, whatever. It's just a mess, and clearly Jeff Hoover is acting out, and you know he's a good legislator, and he's been effective at kind of derailing stuff.
Right.
But at the same time, like, the Republicans just didn't do the work needed to deal with this situation.
No, they didn't, and they're not on the same page.
Right.
Either. The motion to table vote was kind of all over the place.
It was.
In terms of ideology. Yeah, they just don't seem like they're on the same page.
I mean, it was like Joni Jenkins voted against tabling it. The Democrats weren't on the same page either, obviously, because they didn't, you know, they didn't know this was coming. So you have like Joni Jenkins and Mary Lou Marzian on opposite sides of a vote there. And you have Speaker David Osborne and then, you know, Majority Floor Leader Jonathan Schell, like the two top people in the Republican Party in the House voting on opposite sides of this. And I don't even remember who voted for what. But
right.
Clearly.
And obviously this wasn't the actual vote on the rule itself. It was just the vote on whether they should table it or vote. But still, like.
Yeah, I mean, there was no clear strategy. I mean, he spoke for 20 minutes. You don't need to hear that speech. You can watch it on KET later. Like, you know this vote's going to happen. If Stanley wants to make a motion to table, he needs to be whipping votes to be like, hey, vote against this. or getting David Osborne to do that or something. You need to be doing your work, and they just weren't. And in the meantime, you know, we have a major issue that they brought up about pensions, and we have a budget that we need to get passed, and it doesn't seem like we're doing either one of those things, right?
Right.
All right. Well, we have plenty of drama. We don't have much policy, but we have other things to talk about too. So, Jasmine, the next thing that I wanted to bring up was something that I think has become kind of a big story. And that's the rash of House Democrats who are retiring. So we've talked about some new people that are trying to run for office in challenging seats. You know, some places where there have been Republicans in place for a long time. But we also have 9 current Democratic legislators as of now, as of today, which is January the 10th at 6 o'clock, who have declined to seek re-election next year. So it's Will Kersey of Simpsonia, James Kay of Versailles, Rick Nelson from Middlesboro, Darrell Owens from Louisville, Jody Richards from Bowling Green, Steve Riggs from Louisville, Arnold Simpson from Covington, Gerald Wayne from Paducah, and Jim Wayne also from Louisville. And shout out to Ryland Barton for putting that list together on Twitter. That seems like a lot, right?
Right, it does.
There's only 40 Democrats in the House currently, and 9 of them are retiring. But, you know, maybe that isn't as bad as it seems. And so I was thinking about this, and I looked at the list of people. You know, all 9 of these people are men. 8 of the 9 are white. And I did some math, and it turns out that the average age of the retirement person retiring is about 63 years old. So we have Will Kersey and James Kay, who are younger. So James Kay is leaving to run for Woodford County judge executive. I'm not sure what Will Kersey has next up. But, you know, Darrell Owens and Jody Richards are in their 80s. And they're both really good legislators. I mean, Jody Richards helped shepherd Kira through in the 90s.
Right. And Darrell Owens filed the felony expungement bill that allows for some Class D felonies to be expunged.
Right. And that was his bill. And he's done a lot of good work. And I mean, all these guys have done good work. But, you know, you got 2 guys in their 80s. You got 3 of them in their mid-60s. Jim Wayne's just turning 70. These are older people.
The one that shocked me was James Kay.
Yeah. So that was very surprising also to me. But I think one of the things that's the most important to consider about the Democrats, at least in terms of their electoral chances, is that only one of these seats was a tough election last year. So Rick Nelson, who we just mentioned, he's 64, and he won his seat last year by a 3% margin. But everybody else was greater than 9 percentage points better than their opponents. And Will Kersey, of course, he was the closest with a 9%. But Darrell Owens won by 52%. Arnold Simpson has never had an opponent for that seat. You know, Jody Richards won by 16% in Western Kentucky. That was pretty surprising to me. Steve Riggs, he doesn't have an opponent currently, but he won by 16% last time, just the same as Jody Richards. Gerald Watkins won by 11% out in Paducah, and Jim Wayne was unopposed in 2016, but won by 17% in 2014. And right now that seat doesn't have a Republican running in it either. So, you know, it's never great for electoral prospects of either party to see a lot of people retire en masse. But I think this is a little bit of a special case. I don't think the Democrats' chances of getting a majority back are all that significant. And I think one of the reasons, especially some of these younger guys like James Kay, I think one of the reasons that they are leaving is because they don't want to serve in the minority. Some of them have served for a long time and are used to, you know, getting bills passed and being able to work with people.
Right.
And being in the minority party in a state that has a trifecta is just not very much fun.
No, probably not.
And that's understandable. And James Cave leaving to be an executive in an executive position in Woodford County, that makes a lot of sense because he wants to actually work on stuff and get stuff passed. And, you know, more power to him, I guess. It's a little sad to see him go, but if that's what he wants to do, that's fine. But I do think several of these retirements allow for younger and more diverse candidates to serve. So, for example, Steve Riggs' seat, that seat already has 1 person running, and it's a woman who's my age. Jim Wayne's seat has 2 people running, a guy that I actually went to college with, he's exactly my age, and a woman, which would, you know, add to the number of women that we have in the legislature if she were to win. So, you know, that's, you know, Jim Wayne's awesome, but I think it's good to get younger and more diverse people into the legislature. And these retirements, you know, it's not great for your electoral prospects, and they may lose a couple of these, but I think it's good to get a more diverse and younger group of people a chance to run for office. So, I don't know. That's what I have to say about that, Jasmine. What do you think?
I think you're right. I think it is good that we have younger and more diverse people running. I guess, you know, the worry is that, okay, these people who were in the legislature for a pretty long time had name recognition, so their seats were pretty safe. So now we don't know who's going to run against them and what's going to happen.
And you definitely run into that in Western Kentucky. It's a much more Republican area of the state. I don't think that these Louisville seats are in any danger whatsoever. And that Northern Kentucky seat that Arnold Simpson's sitting in, that's in absolutely no danger. As long as you can get somebody to run. And you hope you get somebody good to run. But those Western Kentucky seats, that could be a little tough. But they're in urban areas. The Richard seat is like the middle of Bowling Green. Gerald Watkins is the middle of Paducah. And, you know, those are more Democratic areas than some of the more rural seats that you might see. So, you know, time will tell for sure. But I think this is going to be a better year for Democrats than last time. And these were, you know, not close, really, all that close last time. So that's that. Jasmine, are you ready for some quick hits?
Go for it.
Jasmine, your favorite judge. Well, I don't want to say that because that's bad, right?
Right, yeah. I wouldn't say my favorite judge. It's just like our most popular judge on my old Kentucky podcast. Yeah. I don't actually really know much about him. He's just been in the news quite a bit because he sits on the Franklin Circuit Court.
Jasmine, the judge that Jasmine talks about the most on this podcast, Philip Shepard, who is a... Which court is he in? Is he
Franklin Circuit Court?
Franklin Circuit Court. He declared much of last year's war on Louisville bill, at least the trash bags law, unconstitutional. So just to catch everybody else up, the city of Louisville passed an ordinance that said you couldn't have plastic trash bags with yard waste in them. The state government said, no, actually, you can. We're going to pass a law that basically makes it so that the city can't do it. And Judge Philip Shepard said, no, that law is unconstitutional. So now we're back to you have to use paper bags to bag your lawn waste. I do that anyway, so it doesn't affect me, but there you go. And Jasmine, the other quick hit is that Paducah, which we were just talking about with Gerald Watkins, Paducah became the 8th Kentucky city to pass a fairness ordinance which makes discrimination against the LGBT community illegal. So good for them.
Yep.
That's great. Yeah.
My favorite city that has one is Vico.
Yeah. It's kind of interesting. So Vico is a tiny city in eastern Kentucky. The Kentucky Fairness Group spent a lot of time and money getting that passed. A lot more time and money than probably the city of Vico has ever seen before. But Paducah, yeah, you know, this just goes to show you. I mean, the mayor there is an Emerge alumni. And it's cool that, you know, she got elected out there and now they're doing cool and progressive things. So good for Paducah.
Yep.
All right, Jasmine, how can people get a hold of us?
They can find us on Twitter at @myoldkypod. They can like our Facebook page. We put our show notes up on Medium and you can find our podcast at the podcasting app of your choice.
All right, everybody. Thanks for listening and we will see you next week.